welcome to episode 3 of High and Low, a Kurosawa cast, with your host, Joel Torres, and me, Spencer Seams.
So, do you want to pick out another shirt?
We're recording right now.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. Hi!
Who are you?
Oh, you already said my name. Why do I have to say my name again?
So we don't confuse the listener.
Well, I don't think we sound particularly alike, but maybe that's my misconception.
And you never know.
Yeah. My name is Joel. And I am also on this podcast.
So this week we are talking about a little known... Well, I think this is one of Kurosawa's more lesser-known movies.
I certainly had never heard of it.
I had seen the name once before and thought it sounded silly, and that was about all I knew about before I watched it.
You know, having watched the movie Lady Hawk recently, that is a movie that tells you exactly what the contents of the film is.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody watched this with the hoping that they're going to see a tiger at some point, they're just going to be disappointed.
Yeah. This is a sidebar. When your podcast did Lady Hawk, I thought it was Hudson Hawk. And I was like, that Bruce Willis movie that I tried to watch when I was 12? And then I looked up Lady Hawk and like, oh, different movie.
Yeah, I don't think Hudson Hawk fits into our purview, so...
I just remember trying to watch it and being like, when it first moved, I realized movies can be bad.
That's the one.
It is one of the first. Okay, anyway, so the men who tread on the tiger's tail has a little bit of a troubled history. I'm not sure if you looked into it or not.
What do you mean, the film production?
Not production, but the release.
Oh, no, I did not.
Right, so, before you do the synopsis, basically, okay, I'll tease this now. This movie is based off a kabuki play, which is called Kanjicho?
I mean, yeah, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, and that's based off an older play, a no play, and no is a type of Japanese theater from most sources say the late 1400s, although different places say different things. And so this is a very old story, and it's a very beloved play in Japan. It's, I guess, for... a bad comparison. It's kind of like their Hamlet to an extent, where the men who tread on tiger's tails is kind of making fun of it, and the Japanese censor board was very upset over it, and so they banned the movie from being released in 1945, and then the Americans banned it from being released because if you heard in the last episode, when Transoccupied, their movies weren't allowed to be too prideful of their history, and so this was considered too prideful of their history, so the movie was banned again for another 7 years, and then it finally came out in 1952.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I was thinking about what Kevin was saying last time, and yeah, saying that they couldn't make samurai movies, and this movie, according to Criterion, its mm-hmm. release date is 1945, so that would have been just at the end of World War II. That makes sense, yeah. That they would have got this movie done, and then probably after that, that's when all the sanctions fell down.
Yeah, pretty much. Just one after the other. And I found the New York Times review, and I don't think it showed in the U.S. The review is from 1960, and I don't think it even showed in the U.S. until 1960. So this is one that just took a while for people to actually see.
Makes sense.
All right, so as per usual, you synopsize it.
Wait, why do I have to synopsize?
Because you're good at it.
I didn't watch this movie. I don't. I was hoping I could just BF for 60 minutes. Okay, so this is a tale of a noble lord who is in a battle with another one, a shogun, that is. And, I mean, not, that sounds way too dramatic. They have some sort of disagreement to the point where one shogun wants the other one dead. So he is pretending to be a monk with his six bodyguards. They're all dressed as monks. They all look the part. And they are trying to make their way out of this land where they're wanted and just escape to freedom. But they come across a porter, which I'm not exactly sure what this guy is. I mean, he's just a poor guy, right?
Yeah, he's just like a lower class person.
And this is the comic relief in the movie. The porter is a very silly person, but he is also extremely informative.
And he's just called the porter the whole time. He's never given a name.
He is the one who stands out in the movie. I mean, people probably had porter t-shirts after this movie came out. So the porter informs them that, oh, I heard that they were talking about that these guys are obviously dressed as seven monks, and they already know, and they're not going to get away with it, which kind of foils their plan for the time. But then the lord is dressed up as a porter also, and they continue their journey, several times changing their path so as to avoid being caught. Eventually, they get to a wall where it is being heavily patrolled, and whoever is in charge of this, what is he? He's just an officer, right?
I guess a border guard, more or less.
Well,
he's a chief border guard.
Yeah, he's presented with these six monks and these two porters, one of them being the comic relief and one of them being the shogun, who is in disguise. And he doesn't know who they are, although he's got a partner next to him with a goofy mustache that is very suspicious.
He looks like a cat.
He looks like something.
Well, to me, he looks like he wants to get plastic surgery and become a cat.
He looks like a character I've seen in anime with, you know, that's always like with the fan, like, oh, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you're picking up.
Well, it's about time. The head of this group, the person who is in charge of these guards, presents his case to the chief, and he does it in a very dramatic way. It's like this is probably this is the highlight of the movie, this whole section. Hold on a second. This whole section where they're trying to get past the wall in order to continue on their journey, because all of the guards have to pretend to be monks. One of them has to sell it really hard to this chief and the commander of the border guards, that is, and he has to keep coming up with new things as the commander and his lackey with the mustache are trying to figure out who they are, up to even opening a scroll that is completely blank and pretending to read off of these prayer order for a church that they want to build, right? A temple.
Or rebuild, I think.
Yeah. And eventually, the commander is convinced. They get up to leave. There's another kind of like, hey, wait a minute. you know, somebody actually takes a look at the other porter and realizes he's got really straight hair and he looks like he's never lifted a thing before in his life. And the head of the guards, in order to maintain this disguise, begins whipping the shogun to show, at least to the guards at the border, that, like, this is just a porter and he's, you know, he's pissed me off, so I'm gonna beat him.
Which
is completely unheard of. Like,
yeah,
even the border guards are like, you, if he was really the shogun, there's no way this guy would have done that. I mean, that's suicide.
Yeah, you got a seppuku.
So they're convinced. They move on. Everyone is very happy that it's all done, including the shogun, except for the main guard is very... I mean, he is ready to commit seppuku. He thinks there's so much shame upon him. But the shogun is kind and tells him that he knows this is the only way that could have been done, and he's glad that they're all alive. And then at the end, a bunch of the border guards show up with a bunch of booze, being like, hey, the commander was like, I'm sorry I treated you so bad. Here, let's have a dance party. And they kind of do.
And they abandon the porter.
Kind of a weird twist at the end. Like, hey, that guy who's been, like, super...
helpful. Super
in charge and... No, I'm talking about the chief of those guards. He's like... he's the one who's in charge. He just gets tanked.
Yeah, he does drink a whole lot of it.
So it's only a 60-minute movie. And like I said, I think the best part of it is when they are at the border.
Yeah, it's... that's pretty much the movie itself, is the middle section of them trying to prove themselves to be who they are. Trying to prove who they're trying to appear to be.
Right. They pull off the monk thing. Every single one of them is... There's a bunch of tension going on. There's drama. There's things that you can't believe. Like, the commander of the guard there is saying, like, well... I'm sorry, I've just been told that I can't allow anyone to go through here, especially not monks. We're specifically looking for monks.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like somebody who was less bold would have been like, oh yes, of course, we'll simply wait until, or we'll go to another location to get around here. But the commander of these, the guards of the shogun, is like, ha! You are being ridiculous. I can't believe how ridiculous you are. You know, he's practically spitting in this guy's face. Like, I mean, we're just a bunch of monks and these two porters, and we just want to go through, man. Yeah. We're on a religious journey. We're collecting funds to rebuild this temple. But that guy does such a great job.
Benkei.
Played by Denjiro Okochi.
Mm-hmm.
Does really good. And you were saying that my father's in this, except for this guy, who is mm-hmm. now... he's been in three of the three movies we've seen.
Uh-huh.
And that's Takashi Shimura, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't look like my father in this. He looks 20 years younger, which he is.
Well, at this point, he was like in his mid-40s.
Right. And he's basically a tag-along in this movie. He's just...
looks, you know, cool, the ponytail.
Yeah, when the other guys say, let's do this, yeah, I agree. And he's like, yeah, and we should also do this, you know. He doesn't have that much of a speaking role.
No, not really.
Yeah.
So, is there any specifics about this movie that really spoke to you on some level?
You know, the porter, the guy, Kenichi Enomoto, the actor, his name,
mm-hmm.
I think he is really good in the movie.
Yeah.
His character reminded me of another character that's in Yojimbo, I think. Isn't there a character in the beginning of Yojimbo that's kind of like crazy?
Yes, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. See, I actually can't remember that character in Yojimbo, but I do remember him in A Fistful of Dollars.
Are that character type?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where he's kind of like, hey, you going to do this? Oh, you shouldn't do that. But, you know, laughing.
Wait, are you saying A Fistful of Dollars is based off of Yojimbo?
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell Kurosawa.
Do you think Clint Eastwood actually likes Yojimbo?
I think he has respect for the art. I don't know.
I've always wondered if he actually likes the Kurosawa movies that made him famous by doing the remake of, basically.
Yeah, I don't have a clue. I mean, they're both based off of the Blue Harvest book, anyways. Red Harvest, sorry. Blue Harvest is what Star Wars was called while it was being made. Yes, Red Harvest.
Red Harvest is
Dashiell Hammett, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read it. It's... Well, Yojimbo is loosely based on it. I'll say that.
Right, I can understand.
It's not really 100%. I want to talk about the book. It's a little disappointing. Anyway.
We'll get to it eventually.
Yeah.
What would you compare this movie to, if anything?
Like, just in general?
Yeah, in general. Yeah. Would you compare it to A Summer Day? No. like another piece of media.
But to me, it feels like a Western.
Hmm.
Like a bunch of people trying to get across a state border or like a border of some kind, and they have to... You know, it's like, I don't know. To me, this feels like a very Western-style plot.
I don't know. It feels like the 47 Ronin, that, like, four-hour version that I've seen, that I think is from...
47, I think?
Yeah.
46 is around that time.
I don't know. But that, you know, that is just straight samurai, and this feels like that to me also. It doesn't feel like any Western that I've seen, because...
Well, I mean, like, the bare bones of the plot of just a group of people who are trying to escape into a new region because they're on the run from some powerful forces, like the military. So to me, it feels like... If this is a Western, it would be a bunch of bandits who are trying to escape, like the Rangers.
So it reminds you of an American Tale.
A little bit.
I don't know. I'm getting hung up on the disguising themselves as something else.
Yeah, well, I just mean, like, well, that part doesn't feel very like a Western.
Right. That feels... like something that they would do in a kabuki play, or Shakespeare, for example, which I'm sure he was influenced by something like that too.
Well, Kurosawa made a couple Shakespeare adaptations.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I know.
3 or 4.
What do you have to say about this movie? You're making me say everything.
I like it, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of missing something from being great to me. I'm not really sure what's missing, just, well, part of it is, like, the reason I don't like I don't like Throne of Blood, his take on Macbeth very much. Because to me, it doesn't feel like a Kurosawa movie. It feels like Kurosawa trying to do his version of Shakespeare. This movie feels like his version of trying to do this very famous Japanese story, and it doesn't really feel like 100% him.
Well, I think the best parts of this are when it is something that could be centralized on a stage. You know, I keep talking about when they're trying to get past a border. That's a very stationary thing. You know, with only the occasional movements, and you could see that in like a dance move, you know, sort of action that they did in Kabuki. And not to mention the singing that the guards have to do and the prayer.
Oh. And there's a singing chorus helping along the plot in case you weren't paying attention.
Mm. And comedy relief Porter making googly eyes and going, you should be laughing. This is crazy.
Yeah, that should have been annoying, but it kind of worked. I liked it.
Oh, he pulls it off. I mean, he pulls off the full very well.
Yeah, it's like a Don Knotts performance.
I do think that the points leading up to that are kind of asinine. It's not like by seeing them progressing through the forest, changing their disguises or anything like that. We're not. I don't get the dedication, the feeling that these guards, samurai are dedicated to the shogun. I'm sure that's what part of it was supposed to be. But they are kind of goofing off. You know, obviously the porter's running around being a Dorcas.
And they abandon him twice at that point, too.
Well, they don't want him to tag along. They think he's just annoying, you know, until they find him useful.
Yeah.
When they steal his clothes. And we don't want a porter near this shogun. You know, there's no way he would normally be anywhere near this guy. It all pays off in the end when he does his little dance.
Yeah. And then they abandon him again.
Good. He doesn't belong.
Yeah. Like, that's a... Well, so a little backstory on the movie is that, Kurosawa, so in the original, not the Kabuki play, but the No play. Well, first off, do you know what No plays were? In H.O.?
Gaspar No, yeah.
No. It's an older form of theater in Japan that goes back like four or 500 years earlier than Kabuki. And it's... The actors aren't portraying characters, they are storytellers who dance and they move in a certain way to portray the story. So the story is told through their movements or in their makeup and their costumes, not by them playing a character. And so in the original No play, where is it? I can't remember. Akata, still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
In the original play, the chief border guard is just one character. Doesn't have a sidekick. It's just one character, and it's I like that with Kurosawa made the split him into two different characters to make it easier to show like an interplay between them instead of just like a guy trying to look like he's trying to figure something out. Like it's easier to show with two people instead of one person.
Trying to see what else.
Let's see. And also in the original play, the shogun is supposed to be played by a child actor, not a grown actor.
Well, I think this is he was supposed to look substantially younger than the other ones. I don't...
Yeah.
He wasn't a child, obviously, but he did look very frail.
He looks like a little Yeah, little, you know, rich kid.
You saying you could beat him up? Is that what you're trying to say?
I could take his lunch money.
Yeah.
But the porter is not really much of a character in the no play, and the porter isn't really in the kabuki play either.
Hmm.
And the porter, basically Kurosawa's added the porter so that the audience can
laugh.
People who laugh and actually understand the plot, and so we can know things that are happening in the story. Which, another really good thing to add. And I read some reviews that basically a lot of people don't like this movie as much as other Kurosawa's. A lot of people have this lower on the list.
Yeah.
Mainly because they think that Porter's kind of shoehorned into the whole movie, which I kind of see, but I personally don't mind it.
No, I don't. I don't think he distracts from it.
He's a good addition because, like, I'm not sure if you did you think the movie was funny?
I thought certain things that happened once again during the confrontation at the border gate were funny. Yeah, like I thought. Well, I thought that like I said, that guy reacting that way in like defiance rather than like acceptance was a funny thing. And that part at the end after he's pretended his way through the scroll, where he's answering all these Buddhist questions in like rapid succession, but his face is like, I mean, it's in black and white, but you can imagine his face getting like super red, like, you know, he's like yelling them practically.
Yeah,
like, I found that to be funny.
Yeah, this is supposed to be a satire of the kabuki play and the no play.
Yeah,
which, as I mentioned earlier, some people took a lot of offense to that and banned it because it was like sacrilegious to make light of this one play in Japan because it's so important that you can't make fun of it. But
yeah, well, you know, only took who knows how many years for some people to chill out. That's okay. It's not like it stopped Kurosawa from making movies.
No, he has started making movies about doctors and stuff.
Doctors. What did he do directly after this?
I think
No Regrets for Our Youth.
That's when I watched. Well, we'll get to it. But so the chief border guard was Kurosawa's original leading man in his first few movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so watching this, his performance was okay. I can kind of see how he didn't really stick around as a leading man with him. That
he didn't really have anything to do in this movie. I mean, he just had to like hold his face in a position so that it looked like he was being serious and holding, you know, just the position that he'd been assigned and being completely in charge of the situation.
And he'd side eye to his Catman.
Yeah, Catman's whispering in his ear, being like, I don't know about this. And he's like, I'm not talking to you. Says here he was also in the Hidden Fortress.
I don't remember him in it.
Says he plays General Tadokoro. We'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
Also, he's in Mothra versus Godzilla.
Interesting. Do you think he initially hated Toshiro Mifune?
I don't see how that's possible. How could anyone hate Toshiro Mifune?
Yeah, but he is Kurosawa's like go-to like leading man guy, and then Toshiro came in and kind of stole that from him.
Who knows if that was even his, like, you know, the situation could have been that he wanted to move on to something else, like bigger movies or something like that. He was probably just being tossed around Toho for whatever projects they needed after that.
Yeah, but I think he was in, he's in the first four Kurosawa movies in a leading role in some way.
Yeah, I see that he was in the Susumu Fujita movies. There's more than one, right?
What are you talking about?
His first movies.
Oh, the propaganda movies he did?
What am I looking at?
What are they called?
Oh, Senshiro Suguda, and then Senshiro Suguda Part 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. I was talking about something else.
Yeah, apparently those aren't... Well, we'll get to those. But I hear they're not very good.
Everyone has to start somewhere. We can't all be David Lynch or somebody else who made a good movie.
Yeah, some of us have to start in propaganda movies.
It could have been worse. It could have been an M. Night Shyamalan. Start at the top and just fall into a pit.
Let's see.
So now you've seen a bunch of his movies. Had you seen this before we had to watch it for the podcast?
No. I had it on my Netflix queue list for a while, and then I took it off. And I was like, I'll probably never watch that one. And then I bought it on DVD because I bought his the collection, the first five movies.
Right.
Yep. So I'd never seen it. I just knew of the name.
Well, where does this rank?
I'd say just above The Lower Depths. My second least favorite.
Really?
Yeah, it's...
Hold on, my cat. Oh. My cat is about to sit on the keyboard. Hi, buddy. It's real sweet. Get down, Pascal. Come here. Oh, there you go. It's a big boy. Okay. We're safe.
Yep. So, I'm not sure if you noticed, but you don't see Benkei's face for about the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, I did notice that they were doing it all from behind. That sounded wrong. Doing all the shots from behind. And when they revealed him, I didn't really... I guess that was more like a throw to the Kabuki play, like you said, because he is the main character of the play, right?
Yeah.
He's the hero.
Yeah. He's the main character in the No play and the Kabuki play.
He's, you know, they picked a really good guy to do him. I think that Denjiro Okochi does a really good job.
Yeah, to me he looks like a Japanese Sid Haig. Sid Haig, he's a bunch of 70s B-movies, and he's in most of Rob Zombie's movies.
I was going to say he's in The Devil's Rejects, right?
Yeah, and he's in two Tarantino movies.
Based on this picture on Wikipedia, I don't know what he looks like. That is not the way he looked in the movie. This looks like a high school photo.
Talking about Denjiro?
Yes.
He has big eyebrows.
He was in The Million Rio Pot. And also in nothing else I've heard of. A couple other Kurosawa movies like No Regrets of Our Youth, Senshiro Suguda Part 2 and Part 1. So he was a staple from the beginning too, basically.
Yeah. I don't remember him in any other Kurosawa movies.
He's just not, he's no Takashi Miike, or what did you say his name was?
Takashi Shimura.
Takashi Miike, you know, the director.
Yeah.
Takashi Shimura. He is no...
And well, in this performance, he has a lot of presence, and he's very... He is the movie.
Right. He's no Toshiro Mifune, is what I meant to say.
No one is.
Yes, that's the problem.
The porter. Where are we going with this?
I don't know.
So, the way they treat the porter in this store, this will get kind of pretentious.
Please.
So I'll give you a warning. So, the porter is, since he's meant to be the point of view character, correct?
I don't know. I guess that makes sense.
Because, like, I mean, he does
basically explain what's going on. But they have those inner titles during the movie that,
yeah,
where people are actually singing what the plot is.
But also, I felt like the porter, I think he's the first character you see. And I think based off the way he reacts, like with the reading the scroll and the scroll's empty, I think he's supposed to be like the point of view character of like, isn't this crazy? And let's say I wrote down. But the... Okay, I got it. So, but he just gets thrust into this whole political intrigue and this whole crazy situation, even though he's a commoner and he shouldn't be in it, correct? Like, he's kind of tags along and he doesn't really belong there in the first place.
Right, and he doesn't really do anything other than observe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it ends with them abandoning him for like the third time, and he's kind of fine with it. But to me, it felt like kind of maybe a comment on class of the like the affairs of the higher class are more important than the lives of the lower class. I know, because I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out how to interpret the ending still.
I think you might be looking a little too deep into what is going on. I mean, they just drop him off. But
yeah, like he passes out drunk and then they just leave him there.
Yeah, I mean, they're all drunk. They're drunkards.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't belong. He was us. We don't get to follow them either.
Yeah, like, there's a bigger, more epic story there, but...
Well, the way you're talking about how people were upset about this movie being made the way it was, mm-hmm. He was the Jar Jar Binks.
That is true.
Everybody at the end was like, I'm glad he got abandoned, but I wish he was dead.
Yeah, but this he was actually funny and entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why somebody would get upset, though. It's ancient tradition, or not, you know, whatever, hundreds of years of tradition based all around this work. Yeah, I can understand, but people...
It was, at this point, over 500, well, almost 500 years old.
And people still get their panties in a bunch about ridiculous things, you know, traditions that are broken.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not going to destroy the history of this the kabuki play, the, you know, the no play. It's like, well, actually, like, for me, this is the only reference I have for it, so technically they were right.
You never encountered no plays before?
No plays. Yeah.
Oh. I took my literature class at the first college I went to. My literature teacher, because my second favorite teacher I ever had, he had us go over a no play, and we watched an actual, like, a short clip of one. And they are fascinating. Because, like, I don't remember if there's any, I think there's some speaking in it, but it was, I'm not sure how to explain it, like, because it's, the story isn't that easy to follow, and you'd really have to pay close attention and understand the cultural traditions and cultural customs of Japan, like, on a deeper level, too, for a foreigner to really get it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, movements and makeup and costumes that tell a story and no actual actors. Well, I don't know. It's interesting. And I read that, like, a lot of people who love no plays go to them multiple times just to get to fully get everything in the story.
I don't know if I want to do that much homework before I go see a production, you know? That's all I'm saying. I don't think we have very much left to say about this particular movie, but it was a short movie.
Yeah, I felt like I sound stupid on this one.
No. I mean, we've emphasized before, we're not experts.
Yeah,
I think the important thing to emphasize is that it is still a good movie, and it's obviously not up there with the famous Yojimbo movies for a reason, but I think that it was an entertaining watch, and I keep going back to it, but that the border crossing scene is really good. Like, I was actually, like, glued to the TV set because I was like, something's gonna happen. Something's going on. This guy's going crazy.
Yeah, and there's a part with the 9-syllable mantra where there's the flash montage of all their faces.
Yep.
And I like the still shot of it's Porter Benkei, Togashi, the chief guard, and the Catman in this beautiful, beautifully framed shot. Where they're all just standing, and the porter is hiding behind the pack thing.
Yeah.
Like, it reminded me of, it's all very symmetrical. It reminded me of like a Wes Anderson shot or like a Kubrick shot.
Yeah. And I'm sure they saw this movie many times.
It's only an hour, so.
Yeah.
Don't take that much time.
Yes.
You like this one more than Rashomon?
Well, you know, when the only time I've seen Rashomon was for a film class, and I just really didn't get it, so I'm hoping on a revisit I will get it. But I didn't. I'll tell you one thing that I specifically remember, the laughing buffoon character in that, which is Mafune, really, I found his character to be so irritating that I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. Because the whole time he's supposed to be acting crazy and he's just hamming it up. He's like, ah, ha, 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 what? Oh, you want to know about this? And like, okay, shut up, dude.
I can see that. Would you recommend this Kurosawa film to people?
Yep, that's what I said. I said, it's only an hour. Watch it. And if you don't
feel
watch
like
it,
you should. Well, this is. Okay.
What?
This is one of the least universal ones. Not Universal Pictures, Universal thematically.
It doesn't have Dracula in it.
No. But, like, this is one that I feel like to appreciate it more, you kind of already have to be a big fan of Kurosawa, though. It feels like this, I don't know, it's just, I'm not too crazy about it. Maybe that's just me.
I don't think. I mean, go. Yeah, it could go either way, really. I don't think it's going to hurt to watch it. I mean, but I don't think you have to be a big Kurosawa head to watch it.
So before we close on this relatively short episode, want to know what? So before we started recording, I mentioned that the New York Times reviewed it in 1960 by was it Howard Thompson reviewed it. The highlight of him seeing the movie was the program notes he got when he walked into the movie.
Say that again.
He writes in the review that the program notes were the most interesting thing because he learned about Kabuki, and that he liked the program notes more than the actual movie.
Is this just going to be a running theme of people being completely wrong about these movies?
I hope so. I really like reading the old reviews where people just don't get Kurosawa in America yet.
I mean, okay. So it wasn't like a stellar movie. That's fine. Yeah. But come on.
I'm not a fan, but I think it's actually interesting. I don't know. Howard Thompson, if you're still alive, you're wrong.
I'm sure he died a long time ago.
Yeah, probably. You got stuff to promote?
Well, if you want to hear me ramble anymore, you can listen to my podcast, Please Don't Send Me in Outer Space. Science fiction and fantasy movies every week on Mondays. That's about as much promotion as I want to throw out there.
All right. Right for Semi Knife Fight, old TV reviews, horror, science fiction. So Twilight Zone, Night Gallery, Call Shit to Night Stalker. You know, so if you like old TV like that, check out my reviews. And I'd like to recommend a podcast called, I gotta look it up.
Please Don't Send Me into Outer Space.
Africa Today. It's by the BBC, and it's Monday through Friday, every week, the news happening in Africa, brought to you by the BBC. It's a wonderful podcast.
Cool.
I listened to it. Well, I skipped the US election stuff because it was too depressing, but most of it is actually really good, and you realize Africa is a very diverse and interesting and wonderful place.
Yeah, and I'm sure most people don't know anything about it.
Yeah, you should. Everyone should listen to Africa Today. It's a great podcast. They're only half an hour long episodes, usually.
Sounds good.
So next week, we're covering Momotaro Umi no Shinpei, the first feature-length anime film from 1945. It's slightly longer than Tiger's Tales by, I think, 10 minutes.
That's gonna be fun.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to talk about no matter what.
Yeah. So, we have a Twitter.
We do.
I sent you the password and stuff.
Yeah, I know. I got it.
Okay.
I'm just looking to see what the actual name is. High and Low Pod. At High and Low Pod on Twitter. There's exactly one post right now, but that will be updated.
All right. And our profile picture is a steamy picture of young Toshiro Mifune, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Is it him drinking the tea?
I don't know, man. I'm not an expert. I could be drinking anything.
And we have an email. Hi, and I always forget the email. highandlowpod@gmail.com. You can email us questions, comments, corrections. You know, if you think this movie deserves more discussion, you know, let us know. And we'll tell you, well, we did an episode already, so there you go. Anything else? You got any final words?
No. All right. It's only 59 minutes long. Just watch it.
Yeah. It's not that long.
But no tigers.
No tigers, no tails. But there are men in it. And they do step on the ground.
Yep.
Well, tread on the ground.
True.
So, see ya in 2 weeks. Auf Wiedersehen. # thug life.
No. No.
What?
No thug life.
# thug life.
Ah. Yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks.